This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 451, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then. Happy trails to you till we meet again.
Hey everybody, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 451. My name is Paul Montgomery. Joining me, Mr. Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And sitting in for Josh this week is one of the hosts of the DLC and We Have Concerns podcast, Jeff Cannata.
Hey guys, it is in my contract that I can only be here when Josh is not.
We tried last time when Paul was out.
I know.
Didn't end up working out.
I wanted to so badly, but that was my fault, my schedule.
So normally, we are iFanboy, we like comics, and every week we read a bunch of comics, and one of us picks the best book that we read, and we call that the pick of the week. We talk about it on this year's podcast, along with all the other things, along with our other concerns, topical, talk about our concerns, and various other topics of interest and other goofy nonsense. But before we get to the show, just a quick reminder, we are going to be talking about all the people that died in the comics, all the things that happened, all the important things, all the things you might know as spoilers. We will be talking about those. So if you're worried about that, pause the show, come back when you're ready, and you can join us for a conversation about our pick of the week, which Connor had, and that was what?
Well, before we get to the name, I want you guys to come back with me to November 5th, 2005.
Ooh, that's and a long time ago.
That was the very first episode of the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast. And on that show, we talked about Jonah Hex number one.
Whoa.
And so almost 9 years later, 9 years and just a few months, 8 years, just a few months shy of nine, we have the final issue of Jonah Hex, an All-Star Western number 34. And it's pretty amazing. I mean, it's really sad the book's ending. It's one of my favorite books. If you listen to the show, you know that Josh and I love this book, and it's sad because it's been a book that's literally been there since the very first episode of this podcast. But also, it's pretty amazing that they did 9 years of a Western.
It is.
In this day and age where genre books that are not superhero don't tend to get picked up, especially when you're talking about DC or Marvel Comics. People were lamenting online about the cancellation of this book, but it was over 100 issues of a Jonah Hex comic. And it was pretty awesome most of the way through. So I am sad it's ending, but I'm also pretty celebratory that we got to read over 100 issues of this series. This was the final issue drawn by Darwin Cook, and it was a nice little bow on the end of the Jonah Hex story. And it was pretty clever, I thought. Did you guys read this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you Fantastic. Guys been reading it all the way through?
I've been reading it intermittently. I'm not a huge fan of the character, but I did jump back on when it got relaunched with the New 52, and I've been enjoying it here and there, but it's not every month. But this issue is fantastic.
I would say intermittently is the fair term for me, too. I preferred it as Jonah Hex before it went to All-Star Western and ended up, you know, in Gotham and everything like that. But this is a return to, like, this could just as easily be Jonah Hex.
Well, the last couple of issues have been this way. But what was interesting about this story, we'll get into Darwin Cook in a second, because there's a lot to say about that. But,
absolutely.
So if you've been following along, you know that Jonah Hex... He ran into a time-traveling Booster Gold, and he was sent to the future where he got plastic surgery and his face was fixed. But he also saw the end of his own story. He went to a museum that was doing a Western show, and they had his mummified body on display, and they named the circumstances of his death. And it was pretty similar to the sort of canonical Jonah Hex story in which as an old man, he was killed by a man named George Barrow at a card game when he was old. So here we have Jonah and Tallulah Black, who are enjoying a really nice swim and a really great – Paul, we talked about last week, actually, which was pretty funny, Darwin Cook being the best panel-to-panel storyteller. And here we got a bunch of silent sequences that really sort of back that up.
I was kind of excited at the beginning that it might be a whole silent issue, but it's, you know, it's fine that there were some words. That was okay.
But what's great was, so Jonah Hex and Tallulah Black, they find out that someone's been impersonating Jonah Hex because he's been gone. He was in the future. He was nowhere to be found. So somebody filled that gap and went around pretending to be him. And so they track him down. A gunfight happens. And what ends up happening is Jonah Hex impersonates his own murderer, kills the duplicate Jonah Hex. And now everyone thinks Jonah Hex is dead. And he and Tallulah Black sail off into the sunset. They take their money and buy a boat. But it was a nice little way to... cap the ending of this story by Jonah Hex killing himself in a way and getting to finally, you know, live a quiet life of peace.
I got excited a little bit because I thought they were doing sort of a backdoor pilot that we were going to get Jonah Hex pirate stories, and then he kind of nixes that. But and I also like that the faux Jonah Hex is kind of a sad sack kind of character. It's not just like bizarro Jonah Hex and he's meaner and badder and everything. He's kind of Jonah Heft. He's just a bit paunchy.
And you can see in a couple of the pages, Darwin Cook gives Jonah Hex sort of a bemused smile when he's dealing with the fake Jonah Hex. Like, this guy's an idiot.
Yep.
Yeah.
But what was great was, you know, so it turns out it wasn't his body on display in the future. It was this other guy's body. And it was, you know, he really got to end his story. And I liked that as a way to end this run on the book. But, you know, Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray are the writers, and Jimmy Palmiotti is a good friend of Darwin Cook. So he has come along occasionally to do an issue of this series. Most notably with the issue where Tallulah Black was thought to have died. And I actually have a page of that on my wall in my apartment.
Well, that's nice.
That was a really great issue, but here he comes out to end the story, and he's just so good. And his storytelling is great, and the silent sequences are great, and he gives so much character to these characters in their faces and their acting. It's really a wonderful artistic story here, too.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, man.
There's also some really great just close-up shots, and just when Tallulah or Jonah is looking at each other, it's usually, you know, over the shoulder or something, and there's a lot of intimacy in this book, a lot of cutaways. There's going to be some sexy times now, and there's a lot of... you know, wry glances towards each other, knowing glances. And so I think that goes towards the storytelling that we're talking about that Darwin is also great at.
Yeah.
Yeah. It makes you want to have that kind of relationship. Like he's the luckiest dude in the world. You know, it's cool. And he's also a badass. Yeah. He gets to be a badass. I mean, there's that awesome splash page image with him standing in front of the burning building, just being as awesome as he can possibly be.
He kind of goes Unforgiven at the end there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a fantastic issue. I mean, it's a total standalone. You talk about how it ties into all the lore and pulls things together that have been breadcrumbed from earlier stuff. But it also is this amazing standalone story of just a cool revenge tale, a cool cool Western, iconic Western cliche, but told really well.
Yeah, what's great is if you're a longtime fan, you recognize these things. But if not, you just get a really fantastic story of a, you know, guy coming to town. And there's just really great moments like Jonah doing some reconnaissance and seeing, oh, this gang really doesn't shoot very well, so it's not going to be a problem. And he just walks in and takes them all out. It was a great encapsulation of his character. And Tallulah Black has been as important to this book as Jonah Hex has been. So it was very fitting that they it wasn't just him alone at the end. It was him with her, and they got to have that closure to the story. You know, some people might think, well, you know, is it in Joan Axe's character to want to sail off into the sunset? But he's earned it over these last 10 years. He's had it rough, and he saw a little glimpse of the future, didn't like it, didn't like the end of his own story, so he got to change that. And it was a wonderful final page of their cowboy hats sitting on the rail as the boat sails off, literally into the sunset.
My favorite three panels in the whole issue are the ones where the young kid comes busting into the door like, oh, dang, watch out, here he's coming in. And then the same exact panel, he gets an axe to the head, it's a hatchet to the face, and then and then Jonah Hex is there in the doorway.
It's great storytelling.
It's so rad. And then if you look back on the previous page, as he's walking up the stairs, the hatchet is stowed in his back.
Oh, right, yeah.
So it's this wonderful like consistency there of where the hatchet comes from. It's just great.
Yeah. So Paul, fitting ending?
I believe so. Yeah, I like those kind of endings where, you know, they could potentially have some more adventures.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of the ultimate sort of, you know, get out of jail free card that, you know, for a vigilante like this or a bounty hunter that, you know, you have the clean slate. Everybody thinks you're dead. And so you can have other adventures under another name or multiple other names. And I love those two as a couple. And I just love these characters. I have an Amanda Connor little Tallulah Black sketch that she did at a show a few years back, and they're wonderful characters.
Yeah.
And I was slightly concerned. It was, okay, are we going to do the thing where Jonah like re-injures his lip or something?
Well, I was just wondering the whole time, is he going to do it on purpose? Like, is he going to have her heat up a knife and stick it in his face or something?
There's no organic way to do that. And it was an interesting choice when I found out that they were doing that. That, you know, he was going to get the surgery. And I guess it makes sense if you're going to the modern day, but for the character, can you imagine Jonah like willingly going under the knife? And
well, no, not absolutely not. But I did like that it did seem to subtly change his outlook on things. You know, he's not a monster anymore outwardly. Right. So he can sail off into the sunset. And I just really liked it. I'm sad. The more I think about it, the sadder I get, but also really fitting ending. You don't really get those kind of things. And it really is amazing that DC put out a Western for almost 9 years. So,
and I mean, at this point, it just kind of feels like a creator-owned thing. It just feels like Palmiotti and Gray created these characters. And, you know, Tallulah's theirs, right? But, yes. But you know, Jonah, I think there are some great Jonah Hex stories from earlier, but they really put their stamp on this character.
Yep.
I'm with you though, Paul, man. I'm ready for Jonah Hex pirate stories.
Right? I mean,
has anybody ever done Pirates versus Cowboys in any? That sounds so awesome to me.
I did a script in college because I realized that I could, like, in the timeline, the end of Pirates and the beginning of Cowboys, you could kind of, and I had samurais in there too.
That's awesome.
Paul, why are you giving us that over the air? We should be talking about this.
It was not a very good script.
Well, there you go. All-Star Western 34 was the pick of the week. So that maybe we should end the show now too, because it was the first episode of the first show.
Well, there's so many great comics to talk about though.
Like all new X-Men 31, which was the latest from Bendis with new artist Mahmoud Asrar. And so this was interesting because we find a mutant who has the ability to open up portals between different universes, which allows us to have a full on Ultimate Universe crossover here. In fact, the issue opens in the Ultimate Universe. And then ends with Ultimate Spider-Man running.
I was like,
wait
a minute, Comixology opened up the right thing. I was like, what's going on here?
I had that same moment of like, wait, what?
And then I remembered,
went back
and looked
right at the
there.
Title page.
Yeah.
So what do we think about this issue?
I think it's interesting that this is sort of a transition issue. I think. I mean, we're setting up the whole idea of going back and forth between the different realities. And this is something that Bendis has played with. I mean, I guess starting with Spider-Man, with meshing the two worlds, particularly with Miles. But there's also some like relationship stuff going on. So it's in one aspect, it's a cool down issue from the previous adventure, but then we're also starting up these other crazy things. So it's an interesting issue structurally. And I like, obviously, Bendis, when he does, you know, teen relationship stuff, it's a lot of fun. And I liked the bits with, I think I gravitated more towards the bits with Jean and what, X-23 talking mm-hmm. about Angel and can she trust him and all this stuff and playing into the telepathy and everything. I think I latched on more towards that than the alternate reality stuff.
Do you not feel good about the crossing over?
No, I think he's handled it pretty well before. So
I mean, like conceptually,
not
yeah, as an idea.
I think there was some suggestion that are we going to bring Miles into the 616 and that's going to be a permanent thing? But I think they've sort of established that that's not going to happen. That it's just a crossover.
Well, here Jean ends up in the Ultimate Universe,
right? But I don't know.
I don't know.
Well, I mean, you've already got, so it's kind of like you've got Cyclops in outer space, the young Cyclops in outer space mm-hmm. at this point. Is that sort of the way that they're going to, are they just going to scatter them all over the place? Or are they ever going to end up together again?
I don't necessarily have a problem anymore. I think now that the horse is out of the barn and they've already made the jokes about how they're out of ideas that, might as well play with it a little bit and see what kind of fun scenarios we can get. I like the idea of a Spider-Man. I mean, we all love the Spider-Man miniseries.
Yeah.
I like the idea of a Spider-Man, you know, finding this new world and seeing all these different characters and versions of himself. So that's interesting to
me. Yeah, I think definitely the horse is out of the barn. And so to that extent, I was like, okay, I understand what's happening. Aside from that thing of, am I reading the right issue? When I figured out what was going on, I was like, oh, okay. And it's been established. It's sort of like that suspension of disbelief has already been played with. And since it's Bendis, I was like, okay, I understand. And I'm cool with it.
Actually, I really liked this opening sequence in which Junker, Tony Stark, and Amadeus Cho lose their opening between the dimensions. And I thought that was a nice scene. I liked Cho's sort of realization and breakdown that it was gone. But I don't like the fact that the dimensional portal looks like the Sentries logo. I don't like what that implies.
I didn't notice that, but you're right.
Worried about that. I also, you know, in the past, people have complained that Bendis writes to all the characters with the same voice, and he does for the most part. But I never really mind it because I like the voice and it's entertaining. But here he, you know, one of the things he does a lot is he has a lot of the characters spouting slang that is Hebrew.
With the hangala bit?
Yeah. So I just couldn't think of the word. So he has like Peter Parker, he did that a lot with, which is, you know, doesn't really make sense, but okay. But here he has the waspiest of wasps, Warren Worthington.
Oh, yeah. You're right. If there was
saying, you know, a boobala pun, and it's just kind of like
it was an eyebrow raiser.
Of all the characters, this doesn't work with him. But other than that,
well, if you think about the weird shifting timeline and where they came from, that could be right around the era of Coffee Talk, Mike Myers.
Way to retcon that decision, man.
I'm just saying, it's possible.
So the X-Men are all big Saturday Night Live fans.
They sit around watching, yeah.
Well, that could be, I guess, but it just didn't ring true from a really upscale New Canaan, Connecticut wasp, like Warren Worthington.
Just playing devil's advocate with the Angel.
But,
or Angel, that, not the Angel.
I enjoyed it. Jeff, what did you think of this issue?
You know, I'm not a big fan of all the messiness of mixing universes and young X-Men hanging out with young X-Men, but we're a different time period. All that stuff is a little fatiguing for me. But, Bendis is such a charming writer. It's fun. My favorite X-Men comics from, you know, my child from the Claremont eras, my childhood, is those decompression episodes, the softball games, mm-hmm. and those kinds of issues. And that's why I really liked aspects of this book the most is, you know, we get a lot of that kids being kids, you know, he likes you, do you like him kind of fun, just interplay. I'm anxious to see where this goes and if it's worth all of this messiness, but I don't know. I'm not a fan of that kind of thing in my fiction. Mm-hmm. You know, it just feels so contrived, and it's just like, well, we're trying to do this to try to do it rather than because there's some internal logic that makes it smart, you know.
I wish that they just rebooted Marvel, because I love these young versions of the characters so much that,
yeah,
just if you want to do those characters, do those characters. But God, no, Yiddish slang. What a thing. I shouldn't do the show before I have lunch. So that was all new X-Men 31. Did either of you guys read Batman Superman 13?
I did not.
Yeah, I did.
Paul, you would have, I think, really enjoyed this issue because it was the start of a new arc. Jay Lee is back on art duties, and it's mostly focusing on Lois Lane and Catwoman. And
that sounds like fun.
In this issue, it's
very Jay Lee, man.
Yeah, in this issue, both Superman and Batman have amnesia, and it's a really fun play on, you know, Superman is in Gotham and Batman's in Metropolis, and neither one knows who they are, and Superman doesn't know why he can do these things. Batman is freaking out that he's dressed like he is, and it really allows for a lot of fun. Like, I liked when Batman figures out he's Bruce Wayne and gets all dressed up and is going to go out in the town, because it's pretty awesome to be rich and handsome. But
yeah, it's that scene that a lot of superheroes get, like Spider-Man, for example, that scene of discovering your powers and realizing how awesome it can be to have superpowers. It's a scene that Batman never gets.
Yes. Right?
You know, Batman's the sullen guy who comes to his abilities by hard work and sweat and sadness, you know. And right. So to get
there's no joy, Batman, to have a little bit of joy.
Yeah. To have Batman go, oh, this is cool. I can, you know, jump off a building and be awesome. And also, I'm rich. This is great.
It's like he doesn't have like traditional powers. It's like, oh, I'm really smart. I'm really good at deducing things.
Well, my favorite panel was when, you know, he accidentally summons the Batmobile and it shows up and he's like, oh, hell yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a really fun and the start of an arc. So, Paul, I think I suggest you go back and get this one.
I will.
But I liked Catwoman, coming upon a naked Superman. And then it was really fun. And I'm a big Jay Lee fan, and I was happy with the way it looked. But
his spindly little Batman, I don't know about that. But
I kind of like it.
Yeah,
I like that he has such a strong artistic direction, mm-hmm. and he has a vision, and he doesn't look like anything else being drawn.
That's for sure.
Great scene where the subway just derails, and there's a shot of the subway coming off the monorail thing, but. Really fun. If you're a Lois Lane Catwoman fan, this seems fun. Eye of Satanus, part one.
Yeah.
Okay. Although I guess next issue we're going to go to the Future's End thing. I guess we'll return to this after that. Stupid Future. I don't know why you start a new arc right
Keep
before.
Meddling with Pac and what he's doing with all these crossovers and stuff.
What is Guardians of the Galaxy? I feel like I've heard of it.
Guardians of the Galaxy. I wanted to mention Guardians of the Galaxy number 18 because this is the much heralded, and that's. That in any other situation that would be a pun, but it's not. The return.
Wait till we talk about Silver Surfer for your hair.
Exactly. The return not the return of Richard Rider, but the explanation for why Peter Quill, Star-Lord, has returned from the Cancerverse from the end of the Thanos Imperative to the new Guardians of the Galaxy run, and Rich Rider hasn't.
Only what is it?
Replaced by new kid. If you thought, silly me, I thought it would all be explained in one issue. Not so much.
To be continued.
To be continued. And there's a bit of peddling in this issue in terms of, like, Gamora is interrogating Peter and basically, what happened? What's going on? Why are you back from the Cancerverse? And I don't know why she's questioning him right now when this has been going on for a while. Or maybe this is...
Because the movie's out.
The movie's out.
Thanos is alive.
We need to explain this, yeah. And, you know, I wish she would have mentioned, you know, Scarlet Witch's closet, all that kind of thing as a potential MacGuffin. But she basically just interrogates him, and then you have to turn your iPad sideways because all the flashbacks are in a horizontal view. And have I mentioned I love my iPad and things look great on it? Sorry.
Shut up.
Okay, anyways, it has to do with the Cosmic Cube. Thanos is basically saying, give me the Cosmic Cube, I will save us all, and you don't know what you're doing with that cube, Peter Quill. And Peter's like, no, we want you to die, and we're willing to sacrifice ourselves, so we're going to hang out here. And Drax shows up, even though...
A lot like the end of the movie, actually.
A little bit like that, a little bit. And basically it's got something to do with the Cosmic Cube, and we're still finding out. I feel like there is not a whole lot of information in this particular issue. I think it's an Original Sin tie-in, so they're spreading it out across, I don't know, two, maybe three issues. I didn't check, but
I got an email about this issue from someone I'm going to call Richard Ronaldson.
Okay.
Whoa.
From Northport, Long Island, and he was very upset that they spelled Richard Ryder's name wrong throughout the entire issue.
Oh, did they? I wasn't even paying attention, but
they spelled it with a Y with apparently, the Ryder. And he's always been spelled R-I-D-E-R. He's very upset about it. I just felt like I had to mention it.
Soft reboot for the spelling of that character's name. But it was good to see, you know, Rich Ryder back again, cracking jokes about maybe we should buy an apartment together here in the Cancerverse. I just always thought, like, from the Thanos Imperative miniseries, which was a lot of fun and big crazy ideas as Abnett is wont to do, I always thought the Cancerverse was just a crazy idea. And just like, what's the most hyperbolic name for a terrible place that you could end up? The Cancerverse.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I guess AIDSverse was too much.
Oh.
Yeah.
Cancer actually, I mean, it's a cancerous universe. It's,
yeah.
It behaves like a cancer, so.
I was making a joke in
so contextualize.
Well, one of the things I got to do when I was off on vacation was let a whole stack of comics build up. And so then when I came back, I've been slowly making my way through those that I didn't read while I was gone, including a whole bunch of Image books like Outcast from Robert Kirkman and Paul Azaceta.
Mm-hmm.
And so I read 2 and 3 back to back this week, and I'm holding the wrong one. This is 3.
With the orange one.
Yes. I really like this book.
I think it's really pretty.
I don't.
Yeah.
I wish I did. I wanted to like it.
I'm in the middle, I guess, because I enjoyed enough, but I've never been wild about Kirkman scripts, so I think the art and storytelling. There's that.
Well,
too.
I mean, that's what he's into. I really like. I think for me, I really like that the priest character isn't your typical priest character.
Yeah.
You know, he smokes, he drinks, he plays cards, he gambles. In order to pay for the church roof. I mean, like,
yeah.
I like that he is not your typical small town Southern church preacher character.
That's the broad church reversal,
right?
It's not the priest.
Although in this issue, I guess apparently John Constantine shows up at the end. But reading them back to back, I really did get immersed into the characters in the story. I like the main character a lot, although I couldn't tell you his name. But he's in a very dicey scenario where everyone thinks he beat his wife, even though she was possessed by a demon. So he's sort of an outcast in this town, no matter what he does. And now there's this mysterious man in black in town. I just, you know, I'm not really into usually dark and horror stuff, but for some reason I like it when Kirkman does it. I think there's a lot of good atmosphere. And the Paul, as I said, art is wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, I'm tempted, I'll probably keep going with it just because I love the art so much. And I do like the twist of, you know, him being blamed for, you know, being an abuser, and he's not really. But how do you explain, well, it was possession, you know, I'm not
she
a batterer.
She
was a demon. That's kind of an interesting conundrum. The Azaceta stuff, as you said, it's gorgeous, and the little inset panels, for like the incidental, like detail shots of like when you're going for a doorknob or a lock or a key or something like that. And that sequence where, the near hit and run where the priest mm-hmm. shows up, that was just like a beautifully told sequence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good stuff. I mean, just art wise, really good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree with you guys about the art. It's really good. I don't know. It's just so depressing. And
You're not supposed to kiss like that. You're not supposed to take the person's tongue with you.
Yeah.
It's not nice.
Yeah. And it's, I don't know, dark. Some of the internal fiction of it is weird. Like, I don't think it was in this issue, but maybe the one before it was like, we find out his blood is demon kryptonite. And so why do demons constantly hang out with the guy whose blood is demon kryptonite? And even worse, why do they bite his hand? Like, that seems like a bad choice for a demon. But I don't know.
It's the drug thing, right? It's like if you're an addict, and like, why are you hanging out with those people? You shouldn't be hanging out with him.
Nice.
You're gonna get in trouble.
Demons, Demons just hanging out with the wrong crowd is what it is.
And I mean, if anybody's going to hang out with the wrong crowd, it's going to be demons. Because they're all...
Good point. Good point.
So now I'm going to guess that, Jeff, you read Silver Surfer and Paul did not.
There you go.
I love Silver Surfer so much.
Paul, again, you blew it.
On paper, probably right up my alley, but I haven't enjoyed it.
But I warned you last month that a Defenders issue was coming up, and this was the issue with Doctor Strange and the Hulk.
It's so great.
Oh, I like this. So good.
And this issue is totally a one shot. I mean, there is a continuing story here about the Silver Surfer and Don Greenwood, his spunky sidekick. But this issue itself was just a one shot. And as a fan of Doctor Strange and the Hulk, Paul, you should be checking this out. But Jeff, why don't you tell people why this book is so much fun?
You brought up how Bendis seems to write everybody with the same voice. This is a book where everybody has their own voice, and it's so fun. I love the Silver Surfer that we're getting in this, the cosmic being who has no interpersonal skills with people on Earth and yet is hanging out with this charming young lady that he has to defend. He's hilarious. The bringing in Doctor Strange and the Hulk is hilarious and fun. The art is so all.
The art is fantastic.
Obviously, going to be great. There's wonderful fight scenes. It is a wacky kind of. The idea is that everybody's asleep, and so we have nightmare world where anything can be happening, and the Hulk and Doctor Strange are battling these tentacle monsters while Silver Surfer is bopping through different nightmares. I was laughing. I was entertained. There's great action sequences. This is a thoroughly awesome issue of a comic book. I loved it.
Can I just pick up this one, or should I go back for the?
You can for sure, but yes, I would say yes. You can. Okay. It explains to you in the beginning, the recap page, who these characters are.
I mean, I think I read I read 1, 2, and 3, but I didn't read 4. So
you don't really need to. Just they're back on Earth. The Silver Surfer's trapped. And he literally can't leave the Earth. And so they're hanging out in Cape Cod.
All right. For Steven, and Bruce, I will.
And it's just, Jeff nailed it. It's a really fun comic. I'm not usually a big Dan Slott fan, but I think he really finds the tone in this book pretty well. And it works for these characters in this strange situation where you've got the Herald of Galactus with the power of Cosmic hanging out in a quaint bed and breakfast with this woman and her family. And wacky adventures keep happening. And I just think it's wonderful. And the Mike Allred is born to draw Silver Surfer.
I agree.
So if you want to buy a surfboard and a silver bodysuit, I guess you couldn't buy spray paint, but
you could. It would just come right off.
All other accoutrement for cosplaying as the Silver Surfer, or if you wanted to buy some Doctor Who Blu-rays, because it's a similar kind of tone to the Silver Surfer run, you might go over to ifanboy.com/Amazon, and we get a little piece of the action. No extra cost to you, but it helps us out. It comes right out of Amazon's pocket, and isn't that awesome? So you can check that out. Or if you want to donate more directly, you go to ifanboy.com/registration, and for $3 a month or $30 a year, or really any donation price, you can help us keep the lights on. We appreciate that.
So last time we talked about Star Wars 20, which we didn't know if that was the last issue of Dark Horse's epic Star Wars era, but this is actually the last issue, Star Wars Legacy 18, right, Paul? This is it? It's the last issue.
This is the last stand. This is this is a week of endings. All-Star Western ended, and so did this. So Star Wars Legacy 18, Karina Becko and Gabriel Hardman, the conclusion of their story. And what I like about it is that there's all this Jedi stuff going on, and Jedi versus Sith, and all the conflicts from that first issue coming to a head. But they remember that their main character is a Solo, not a Skywalker. And so she just shoots dudes. So you have this conflict where a Jedi is holding a lightsaber over this Sith Lord, the Sith Master, who's got both of his hands chopped off, and is basically saying, end it, end the Sith, just kill me, just do it. And the Jedi's all pissed because all of this death and dying has been going on, and he's going to kill him. And then he realizes, no, I don't want to give in to hate. I want to be one of the good Jedi. I don't want to be a Sith. And so he lets him go, but then immediately their main character, Anya Solo, just shoots the guy. and she's offered an opportunity to be like the head guard for the queen or the empress, and she says, no, I'm just going to go have some more adventures. I think that because so often, even if you have a solo kind of character, if you have the Han Solo kind of character in the story, they're not the main character. Or it's a smaller story. It's like a side adventure. It's like one of Han's lost adventures. Here you get a big, you know, really important galaxy-spanning adventure where there are huge repercussions to the balance of the Force, the light side and the dark side, but they remember that their main character is not a Jedi, is not a Force user, is a junker, basically, who has adventures. And it ends in a similar way. She's not on a boat going out to
be a pirate.
Or it's not the Louisiana Purchase. But it's like 1 year later, and her and AG-37, who's their IG-88, and Sok, the Mon Calamari, are, you know, we've got in trouble again, and they're in a shootout, and it's exactly the way that should be with those characters. And I've really enjoyed that group, and you know, it's a bittersweet thing because it's a nice ending to the story. I wish that Gabe had gotten to draw that issue.
I thought he was drawing this issue.
I don't know if he did. He might have done some parts of it, but not the whole issue. No, I might be wrong about that. But anyways, he didn't do the whole issue. So that's, you know, that was a,
so that
a
brings
little bit
to
of
close
the,
a really epic
yeah that's
era
the, that's
of
the
comics,
thing.
Which it's we're like gonna talk about in a minute with the audience question. But I mean, that was a double decade long. You know, when I was in high school, and Star Wars wasn't cool at the time, the comics were.
And yeah.
So it's a really important thing. We'll talk about that more in a minute.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Jeff, Fantastic Four number 9. I remember last time you were on, we talked about Fantastic Four. Are you still,
yeah.
You're still reading this?
I am. Yeah. It's a fun book. I like that they're not afraid to mess with the status quo. I mean, I guess that's been the status quo for FF in the last few years, is to mess with the status quo. But it's interesting that we're having Reed Richards in this one be tempted into this, what I can only assume will end up being a bad situation, this utopian science world, which is a really cool idea. It's like this M.C. Escher city that this guy is building that's supposed to be a utopia. And we have the children that have been taken away. We got Johnny with no powers. We got Ben in prison. It's a bad scene for the FF, and it's fun how all these different venues are touched on in this issue. It feels like we're leading up to something big. There's not a ton of stuff that happens. We get a big, you know, fight with Ben Grimm in jail, and a big reveal that She Thing has been running stuff in the. It's a little bit of a, you know, cheesy Marvel. It's kind of old school cheesy Marvel issue and series, really. But you know, I'm having a good enough time with it.
I mean, it's the oldest trick in the book to tear the Fantastic Four apart. However, I think what James Robinson's done here is interesting. I like where he's put all these characters.
Yeah,
and as you said, I mean, this world that Reed has found himself in seems like the ideal place for him, but obviously it's not going to be. But it's interesting, and Johnny's in an interesting place. But what's cool about it is, as I get really emotional about where Johnny is. So he doesn't have his powers. So they've brought in Jim Hammond, the original Human Torch, as a sort of background character. So you still have a Human Torch in this book, and he's been looking after the kids. I think there's all very interesting things going on. Obviously, it's going to lead to something bad, but where he's got them is interesting. Is good.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
Enjoying it. So now Batman Eternal is the kind of book that I read. I think of it akin to a TV show I watch while I do the dishes, or read a magazine, sort of on in the background. But every once in a while, something interesting happens, and I look up. and Batman Eternal 21 was the big reveal issue where we find out who's actually been behind all this shenanigans.
Hush, don't say it. Hush.
If you recall, Jim Gordon was accused of a mass murder in the beginning. He's been in jail. He was just convicted of the mass murder. And so now he's in prison. We find out the supposedly good hero cop who's come in step into his shoes while he was in prison isn't actually part of the bad guys, which was not a surprise at all. But the villain was revealed, and who was it, Jeff?
I'm not going to say hush, hush, be quiet.
It did make me groan because I hate that character. So, yeah. But there were some good sequences. I liked Alfred's part where he, you know, he gets to be a little bit of James Bondy guy.
That was rad. That was the best part of the book. Where he's like, my boss has a problem with guns, but I don't. Kind of rad.
But I just hate whoever that character is that I can't remember. So there you go. Superman 34. We're all Superman fans here.
Yeah.
And we're not going to talk about Man of Steel. I know everyone hates it.
You did. I wasn't going to bring
it up. We're not going to talk about it. We're just going to mention it exists.
Okay.
So I feel like, Jeff, this would be a book that you would dig, I think.
Oh, you say that and I'm not reading it. Is it good? I love John Romita, so I should be reading it, but I don't know.
Paul's still lighting your fire.
I was wary about it in the beginning because, I don't know, I was New 52 Superman. I'm really enjoying this. I think this is
feels very much of a throwback.
It doesn't feel like a New 52 book. It feels like people are Superman has a friend. He has a new friend.
Oh, what?
It's this Ulysses guy. He's mean to him sometimes. I mean, he shoots him with optic blasts but that's by accident because the machinists put like weird nanobots on his cheek.
Listen, if you hang out with Superman, sooner or later you're going to get hit with optic blasts.
Sorry, Superman, my bad. And then Superman's like, "Here, I'm going to get that off of you." And it was all right.
I just really liked the scene where they're visiting Ulysses' parents and Superman's sort of sitting on the couch and he just looks like, he looks more like Clark Kent than Superman.
It was nice. It was. Yeah. I liked that. We don't get that so often. I miss the era of Francis Manapul's Crypto, and now we're in the era of, you know, Crypto being a terrifying saber-toothed cat for some reason. This feels more like that other thing. This is a gentler, nicer, you know. And then Ulysses is like, I've traced back, you know, the energy signature of this thing that was attacking Metropolis. Let's go find it. And Superman's like, cool, I'll get my cape. And I was like, yeah, that's what I want. That's what I want.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, it's Geoff Johns is sort of reasserting the old stuff, bringing back the Daily Planet as a backdrop, bringing back the supporting characters, a kinder, gentler Superman. And Romita draws him younger, which makes sense. So if you are someone who's missed that, like Jeff, 32, 33, and this one, 34, we're three issues into this new run. And
all right, I'll go buy him.
The water is safe.
It didn't immediately capture the magic of like when Johns was doing Action Comics, but it's
look,
it's
he still that. Looks stupid.
He's got the weird cuffs. Stupid. There's like nice moments where it's like, just erase, like just give him a crew neck. Don't need turtleneck, weird mock turtleneck thing. He's got those weird extra long sleeves.
But so far, so good.
He's got the superhero equivalent of like those gamer sweatshirts that have like the thumb hole. You don't need that in your life, Superman.
Low number two. Now I missed the discussion of low number one when it was pick of the week. I haven't even heard the show yet because I still haven't read all those books yet. But Rick Remender is such an interesting writer right now.
Mm-hmm.
He's telling all kinds of different. He's staying sort of firmly in the sci-fi world, although I wouldn't classify Deadly Class as sci-fi. But Low is another sci-fi book, and it's really interesting how nakedly personal he's being in these books.
Yeah,
and I say
nakedly naked.
Yeah, I didn't mean to make that pun, but I was staring at the cover, so maybe that's just what happened. But you know, this is a story of people who are society underwater because the sun is expanding. And I remember reading his essay in the first issue about how he got freaked out when he learned the sun would expand and eat the earth eventually. And I did the exact same thing when I was a kid when I found that. But that was what was going to happen eventually.
Yeah, nothing I do is going to matter. Nothing is going to last. Everyone is going to die, yeah.
Like that scene in Annie Hall. He's like, he won't do his homework. What's the point?
Exactly. What is the point? So, but I like that he's exploring optimism in this book. I don't love it yet, but I do find it really interesting.
I really enjoy this book. I've always liked Greg Dottini stuff since the Last Days of American Crime, I believe it was called, with Remender also. Just beautiful stuff, and the colors really is fantastic as well.
I don't like the colors.
You don't like the colors?
I wish his art was colored differently. I wish it was more detailed. I don't like the sort of faux watercolor look.
Okay.
I love the lines, and such really, really cool compositions. I just wish the colors were less abstracted and more.
There's a little bit of an impressionistic kind of thing going on in a flat way with the colors. And when you slow down and actually stare at them, they do appear really simple. Like they're just sort of color swatches overlaying the line work. But I think if you read it at a rapid pace, it as it's intended, it makes sense. I like the palette, I guess I should say.
It's okay if you like and Jeff did not, Paul. It's
no,
okay.
No, I'm just well, no, we're all adults. I'm just, no, I'm just
I
trying
really
to,
dig the book.
I'm just
I
trying to book. Articulate I, it. It's just that I really like the warm colors, and you think, you know, it's an underwater world. You think it's going to be a lot of blues and greens and stuff, and we'll there's a that. Lot of
yellow,
a lot of yellows and warm oranges. But anyways, I agree. I like that it's this examination of optimism. Like if Rick Remender is going to do a book about an optimist, he's going to make you work for it. You see, you know, the intensity of the light. There's also some shadows around that.
Well, it's optimism in the face of horrible, horrible tragedy. Otherwise, you know, it's not too hard to be an optimist.
I think if you told someone it's this book about hope and it's hopeful, and I think you're going to have a very different idea of what, you know, without the context of what they're getting into. And you open this book and it's this guy is having, you know, hallucinatory sex with a prostitute in an alley, and he murders her, you know, trying to kill this cop. And
he's the cop. He's trying to kill the pimp.
He's the pimp. Right. Excuse me. Yeah, he's the cop. Right. And so it's pretty bleak. And then while he's having a conversation with his mom, basically telling her, can you please stop holding out hope that my sisters are alive after 10 years being kidnapped by pirates, basically. Could you please
also,
stop
the air,
hoping?
Also, the air is going to go bad. We're all going to die anyway.
We're all going to die of the toxins. Yeah, that's.
I don't know. It took me a couple issues to really fall in love with Deadly Class. So I'm hoping the same thing happens with Low. I don't dislike it. I do quite like it. I just haven't. I love Deadly Class. I love Black Science. I'm hoping to love Low as much as I love those.
And I kind of like that there's, depending on who you're talking to, you know, there's a different listing of who likes what more. Like, I know you guys are big Black Science fans. I like it too, but I prefer Low and Deadly Class. I just think he's putting out some really great stuff right now. And yeah, all of it's beautiful. It's the thing. He's working with some really great artists.
He does have great partners and all this stuff. So that is Low number 2, and those are the books of the week. You can go to fanboy.com. You can talk about those books. You can talk about other books that came out that we didn't get a chance to talk about. You can do whatever you want within the reason and the law at ifanboy.com. So now, Paul, why don't you read for us our audience question of the week?
Sure. Andrew from Canada writes, I wanted to pick your brain about any experience you guys have had with respect to the transfer of licenses from one publisher to another, be it of characters or properties. I was a huge fan of Dark Horse Comics' Star Wars books, though I didn't care for some of their later works like Brian Wood's Star Wars, and was frustrated that they canceled some of the better series like John Jackson Miller's Knights of the Old Republic and John Ostrander's Legacy. But they had some amazing stuff. Knights of the Old Republic is what got me into reading comics in the first place, seeing issue number 1 on the shelf of my university's on-site comic book store. All universities should have that, by the way.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And Legacy, Dark Empire, Crimson Empire, and Tales of the Jedi remain some of my favorite comic series. All that said, I'm hopeful for the new Marvel Star Wars series. The other experience I had was with Doctor Who. I didn't realize that IDW lost the license until I went to look up a series that I had bought the first volume of on Comixology and found it removed from the store. First of all, that should not happen. No matter
removed
what's going on.
Removed from the store or removed from his account?
I don't know. Hmm. I'm about to buy the first issues of the 2 new Titan series, but I loved what I read from IDW and I don't understand why the license moved. Do you have any experience / stories with license transfers? Some series that got canceled because the license moved or a beloved character lost to another company. Do license transfers tend to be good things?
What's funny is the subject line of this email was like license transfers. And so I saw it and I was like, what? Was someone trying to, like, I thought it was a business related email. But
dear sir.
Yeah. First of all, awesome he had a comic store on site in his college. That would have made life a lot easier for me. But
I had one not too far from my
campus. Oh, it wasn't far. I said take the bus. And you don't want to take the bus.
I could have walked if I wanted.
And this, in this day of internet delivered comic books right to your iPad, you know, it's a different world now anyway.
Listen, this having the comic store off campus allows me to have one of my favorite Ron stories, and that is we were not friends, although we knew each other, but we weren't friends at the time. We had a couple classes together, so we knew who we were. And we ran to each other at the comic store on a Wednesday and chatted, and he bought our books, and I went to wait for the bus, and he went and got in his car, and it was snowing, and he drove right past me. Didn't even bother to offer me a ride back to campus.
Splashing the water right onto your face.
And the comics were soaked.
Oh. And it like happened in slow motion. And there was just like this knowing stare between the two of you. It was like the bit in season one of The Wire where Daniels is going like one way down the street in the SUV and Avon's going the other way. Right. Like looking at each other. I see you. Yeah.
And I heard him laugh on the way up. Anyway.
So licenses.
Well, the big one that I thought about, there aren't a ton, because licensed comics tend to be comics I'm not overly interested in for the most part. But, you know, very famously, G.I. Joe has bounced around a bunch of companies. And growing up, G.I. Joe was one of my favorites. It was a Marvel comic. And then with much fanfare, the first company to get the license after Marvel was Devil's Due, and that was in 2001. Mm. They did the book for a long time, and then IDW's had the license since then. And they've all done good series. I mean, at the end of the day, it doesn't really necessarily matter who the company that's publishing the book is. It just matters who they get to do the work. And Marvel's got some heavy hitters on their Star Wars books.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking forward to those. I don't know. I'm not super excited, but I'll read them all.
Yeah, I tend not to read any licensed books, really. It'd be great if, you know, since Marvel is Disney is Star Wars, that the circle of life will continue and there will be some interplay between what's happening in that universe and the comic series, and that would be fun. But and maybe I'll check that. Maybe that will bring me into that universe a little more comic book wise. But I tend not to read any books that are other things. I like original comic properties. So
actually, you just made me think of something. Marvel was the original licensor for Star Wars comics. So
yeah.
In a way, they're coming home.
That's true.
And I know that the Dark Horse books are really popular and amongst the fans of those books, and people really like them, and I totally understand that. I was a big fan. You know, when I was in the 90s, Dark Empire, that was one of the first non-Marvel DC books I bought, and Dark Horse put it out, and it was great. And over the years, I've read them here and there, but I was never really like an old Knights of the Old Republic fan or that kind of thing. But you know, Marvel started off. They had the license way back in the early 80s. Wasn't it between Star Wars and Empire? Yeah, because they had Luke running around in that yellow jacket.
Yeah, that's
everyone
true.
Assumed he'd be wearing in the next movie. but I mean, this was years and years. Howard Chaykin did stuff back then on Star Wars. I mean, this is years and years and years of Marvel comics.
Yeah,
Marvel
and they're putting out a big collection of those as well, I think in January.
Well, what's really funny is Marvel just twisted the knife by announcing the collection of the Dark Horse books that they're putting out, which made me laugh for its audaciousness, but also it's like, really? Did you have to? I mean, the body's not even cold yet on the Dark Horse license, and they've already announced they're collecting them. But, you know, Paul, what do you think?
I mean, I'm trying to think of other licenses where I was like, oh, no, I was really enjoying this over it, you know, IDW, and then they moved it somewhere else. I have not had that experience that I can recall. Nothing comes close to, you know, Dark Horse losing Star Wars and that going to Marvel. That's mm-hmm. just sort of unprecedented. I mean, because that was, I mean, Dark Horse, they were the custodians of mm-hmm. Star Wars, as you said, when nobody was talking about it, when it wasn't in the zeitgeist. And keeping that, you know, keeping that flame alive. And I mean, I don't know if people would just have, you know, totally forgotten Star Wars entirely and, you know, the prequels and anything that's happened after
what
would have happened. I'm sorry. there's no good alternative to that. I mean, yeah, oh, God. It's a huge place in the canon of the story that a lot of people like really latched onto. And there's nothing like that. And as I was reading it, I was like, oh, like the Dark Horse or like the Doctor Who thing. And then he mentioned Doctor Who. So
I mean, obviously it sucks for people if they're into that story and it has to go away because of some business things, which sucks. But, you know.
And with Doctor Who, this kind of makes sense because it's, you know, it's a regeneration. So they're going to be doing the new Doctor stuff, as I understand it. So it's sort of like it's if you're going to switch, you know, the license, you know, to another publisher, you know, this is a good jumping off point, at least.
Yeah. I'm curious. I mean, the guys they've got doing the Marvel books are really heavy hitters. So like, you know, Mark Waid and Jason Aaron and Kieran Gillen are no one to sneeze at.
Right.
So we'll. I'm going to check those out based on that alone. I'm not really excited. If it is not doing it for me, I won't read them. But beyond, you know, the first couple, but I'll check those out for sure based on the talent they've got going.
When are those supposed to hit?
I don't know. I have the press release somewhere. But I'll let you know, Jeff. Do you remember, let's just for a second, do you remember that time in like the early 90s when Star Wars wasn't a thing?
Oh, yeah.
Paul, you won't remember because you were probably one or two, but...
I was seven or eight, but yeah.
But I mean, I'm, you know, it wasn't...
Well, and then the Timothy Zahn books came out, and that was the real...
Yeah, that was the real thing.
Shot into the arm, yeah.
But it's just funny to think back to a time when Star Wars wasn't really a factor in the zeitgeist.
Yep.
So I mean, that,
you know what's... This is totally left field here, but I don't know if either of you guys saw the movie Boyhood.
No, but I keep wanting to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's a scene in that where they talk about the idea that there will never be any Star Wars movies again, and it's a contemporary reference to what's happening at that time, and it's funny. But anyway, they're shooting it at that time.
It looks like January for Star Wars, and then they're rolling out the others as miniseries, you know, in like March, so
awesome.
February and March.
So Andrew from Canada, definitely sucks if you're a fan of that Dark Horse world. But if you're a Star Wars fan, you might as well give these a shot.
I think the bigger problem there is I hope that Comixology or whatever, that, like, he didn't lose comics that he bought.
Well, it's hard to say from the way he wrote it. Sounds like he just wasn't in the store anymore. Okay. But if they pulled it off of his...
kind of removed from the store. So maybe he got in before the I can't buy it anymore. I think that's maybe what he's saying is that he bought them, and now you can't even buy them.
That's what it sounds like. And that's fairly normal for a license change. Things, you're not allowed to sell them anymore, obviously. And Dark Horse isn't going to be allowed to sell. They're not going to be able to print new Star Wars books. They'll be able to sell what they've got, but they can't make new ones. That's just how the license works. So Andrew from Canada, it sucks, but give these new ones a shot. You might as well see. They could be good.
If anything, it balances out the force since you had an on-site campus comic book shop.
Yeah, jerk.
Serves you right.
Yeah, things can't be too good for you.
We can't hand you life on a silver platter. God, up that hill with the snow and Ron cackling in the distance. Email us at contact@ifanboy.com or leave us a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS 326-2697. Tell us who you are, where you're from, and keep it around 30 seconds. Now, Jeff, tell us about your mini shows.
Well, the most recent one I have is called We Have Concerns. It's at wehaveconcerns.com, and I hope people listening to this will give it a shot. It's a 20 to 25 minute show three times a week, and it's a little bit of comedy and a little bit of sort of science and philosophy. We like to say we make you think and we make you laugh. It was number 8 on the iTunes comedy listings for podcasts, and we're super proud of it. So if people give that a chance, wehaveconcerns.com. Also, if you're into video games, DLC is at 5by5.tv/DLC every Monday.
I thought I'd give you a rest from the video game world this week and bring you over to the comic world where there's never any problems with fandom or gender issues or anything like that.
Yeah, right.
Paul, what else do we have that we did recently?
So some other podcasts that you'll find on this feed. We did the Guardians of the Galaxy special edition podcast. I would kind of like to go see that movie again this weekend. I might. I have a free ticket. So Guardians of the Galaxy, that was a lot of fun. Ron came in and talked about that. Connor didn't show up because he doesn't like movies anymore.
I was at the beach.
He was at the beach. We also did a special edition on Batman Assault on Arkham. If you're limited on time as to listening to podcasts, just don't. The short answer is don't get that movie.
Don't even listen to the podcast.
Or don't even bother with the podcast. Man, that was a rough one. And if I could do one more plug, working very hard, laboring very hard on the new comic book website, Panels. So you can head over to panels.net. You can put in your email address, and we'll let you know when the website is ready. Which will be
sometime in the fall. We have some sort of ETA on that? Some sort of general ETA other than fall?
We will be entertaining you before Halloween. Maybe well before Halloween. So
because I've got this, there's a steakhouse coming into my neighborhood. It's been summer of 2014 the whole year. And I have to say, if you're listening to this on Sunday, it's the official last day of summer. So I want my steak. I want my Panels website.
Yeah. Paul, don't be the steakhouse of comic book websites.
There are articles written. We've got a dev site going, and everything's looking all pretty.
You've got your Panels Pick of the Week podcast coming?
actually, we did the preview sort of placeholder podcast, so that's ready to go. And
you should call it that, Panels Pick of the Placeholder podcast.
It's episode zero. And it's just short telling you everything, you know, what's going on, what we're going to be doing with the podcast. And it's going to be more like a current events kind of show, like what's going on in comics.
I'm just giving you ideas. I'm throwing it out there. It's gold.
I'm writing all of them down.
All right, perfect.
On this notepad.
P-cubed.
So, until that comes up, P-cubed. Perfect. There you go. until that comes out, you can still head over to ifanboy.com. You can comment on this show. You can listen to the Guardians of the Galaxy show, the Batman Assault on Arkham show, any of the shows we have at ifanboy.com, including last week's episode 450, which you can go there and you can see the video feed, or you can go to our youtube.com/ifanboy also to see the video feed of the 3.5 hours that we did.
Worth it just to watch the first 45 minutes where we're trying to figure out Google Hangouts.
They changed the interface on us. We shouldn't have hit record so early.
Well, you can follow ifanboy at twitter.com/ifanboy and facebook.com/ifanboy. And you can follow us all individually, C.S. Kilpatrick, Fuzzy Typewriter, and Jeff Cannata.
If you use a service once a year, it tends to be different when you come back to it. You just find the buttons.
It's like, what is that?
Finally, if you like this show, write a review on iTunes for our show, for Jeff's shows, for Paul's upcoming P-Cubed show, any podcast you listen to. They'd all appreciate if you go to iTunes, write a review. It's how people find shows. It helps people know that this show is good. And they should listen. So if you can go to iTunes, just take a few minutes to write a review. Everyone who does a podcast would really appreciate that. Spread the podcasting love all around the podcasting community. It's a small community. Not very wealthy. It's
what's happening right now?
I don't know. Doing this, I haven't eaten lunch, and I want to put my head down on the desk.
This is the whole blood sugar thing. We're gonna let you
play. Fading. So that's this week's show. Thank you, Jeff, for sitting in for Josh. And he didn't even tell us where the hell he is. He just said, I'm not going to be around, and left.
Anytime I can be where Josh is not.
It's a good, I'm happy to have in life. Really. Paul, I don't need to thank you. You're always here.
Yeah, I'm always here. I'm always around.
So until next week, I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Jeff.
Till we meet again.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also, like, one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.